Chapter 48. They slipped out the door, climbed down the steps, and followed Kolkoff's footprints out of the clearing, stopping every 10 feet to look and listen. They were being overly cautious, they knew, but the Russian was a professional at this. There was a very real chance the man would double back and wait in ambush. Their best chance was to locate Kolkoff and his partner and keep them in sight while remaining hidden themselves. The weather was not going to make this easy. The snow was falling more heavily, and the visibility had dropped to less than 100 feet. Already Kolkoff's footprints were filling in. After 15 minutes of stop-and-start progress, they reached an intersection of pathways. Left and right branches led to another pair of stucco wood cabins, while straight ahead stood a barn-like outbuilding. Beyond that, barely visible through the falling snow, they could see the dark roof of the chapel's lodge. To the left, a muffled thump, a door swinging shut. Sam and Remy ducked off the path and dropped to their bellies in the undergrowth. 10 seconds later, a pair of snow-blurred figures appeared on the path to their left, tromped through the intersection, and disappeared into the trees on their way to the other cabin. A minute later came the squeak of door hinges. Sam slipped back onto the path, crept to the intersection, and looked right. He turned and signaled Remy forward. Together they hurried down the opposite path to the cabin Kolkoff had just left. They ducked inside and eased the door shut. Sam went to the window and knelt down to keep watch. Remy joined them. After 10 minutes, Kolkoff and his partner materialized out of the snow and turned right at the intersection, heading toward the chapel lodge. Within seconds, the weather had swallowed them again.
"How long do we wait?" Remy asked.
Sam fished the brochure from his pocket and checked the tour map. "One more building between here and the chapel. Whether they've already searched it or not is anyone's guess.
So we keep going and hope we see them before they see us."
"Maybe," Sam said, his eyes distant. "Maybe not." He dug through his backpack and came up with their camera. He called up the pictures on the LCD screen and began studying them one by one. "There." He handed Remy the camera. "I shot this while we were circling the dock." It was a picture of the boathouse. Through its partially open barn doors was the white nose of a speedboat.
"It's got to be for emergencies," Remy said. "I count two more behind that one."
In reply, Sam grinned devilishly and nodded.
"I know that look," Remy said. "The mental gears are turning. Let's hear it."
"A little MacGyver-inspired goose chase." Remy said, "As ruses go, it's a bit transparent."
"I agree. But they'll still have the same dilemma.
Follow, split up, or sit tight. They can't afford not to follow, on the off chance it's real. Either way, our odds are improved." They slipped outside, followed Kolkoff's footprints back to the path, then turned left. Ahead, the trail forked around the last outbuilding before the chapel. The fluffy snow had piled up quickly. 3 to 4 inches of it lay on the grass, and the trees were shaggy with powder. Alpine spring had turned to winter wonderland. Kolkoff's prints went right, so they took the left path, then pressed themselves to the building's wall and slid down its length, ducking beneath windows and pausing every few feet to look and listen. They reached the front corner and stopped. Directly ahead lay the lodge portion of the chapel. To their right lay the split rail fence, the meadow, and the path back to the dock landing. To their left they could just make out the sextant statue. Beyond that, the fjord, shrouded in snow and surface mist. Remy stopped suddenly and tugged on Sam's sleeve to get his attention. She nodded with her chin at the wall behind them. With her palm against the wood, she mouthed, "Vibration." He pressed his ear to the wall. From inside, footsteps clunked on wood. Around the corner, they heard the creak of a door swinging open. Sam peeked, then jerked his head back. He pressed himself flat against the wall. Remy did the same. Moments later, Kolkoff and his partner appeared on the path on their way to the chapel lodge.
Sam and Remy waited until they disappeared through the rear door, then sprinted ahead, dropped into a crouch, and duck-walked into the open-fronted firewood shed beside the door.
"Let's give them a minute," Sam whispered. "If they've already searched the chapel, they'll come out pretty quickly. If not, I'm going to make a run for the boathouse."
"And in the meantime, I'm doing what? Sitting here?"
"More or less."
"Forget it."
Sam gripped her hand.
"Once I go, you block yourself in with this firewood and sit tight. Two of us on the move doubles our chances of being seen."
"Then you better keep up," Remy said, and stood up.
"You coming?"
Sam sighed. "I'm coming."
Hunched over, they took off at a flat-footed sprint, circling left around the chapel, careful to stay on the grass and off the gravel path. Within a minute, they'd reached the transition where the lodge's wooden wall became the white stucco of the onion domes. They slid down this wall, following its curve to where it joined the shoreline path. They stopped. Down the path, not more than 50 feet away, was the boathouse. The door was standing open. Just inside the dim interior, they could see movement. Kolkoff stepped out, followed by his partner. They looked around, each pointing this way and that as they talked. Finally, Kolkoff pointed toward the landing, and they headed in that direction. Sam and Remy waited until they were halfway down the path, then sprinted forward and slipped into the boathouse. Roughly the size of a 2-car garage, it was divided into thirds by plank docks suspended by cables from the rafters. In each slip was an orange and white 15-foot Hansbaro workboat. The barn doors were closed and locked by a horizontal 2x4 crossbrace. Sam walked down the center catwalk, lifted the crossbrace to its vertical position, and pushed the doors open a couple inches. A blast of icy air pushed through the gap. "Check for keys," Sam whispered.
They checked each boat. There were no keys in the ignitions.
"Guess that explains what Kolkoff was doing in here," Remy said. "Cutting off our exit. It's either that, or the staff keeps the keys in another location."
"Either way, something tells me he wouldn't have relied just on keys to keep us here." In turn, Sam lifted each boat's engine hatch and checked the system under the glow of his LED microlight. In each case, a wire had been removed from the engine's starter solenoid.
"Not cut," Remy said, looking over his shoulder. "Removed."
Clearly, Kolkoff was planning his own eventual exit strategy.
"Smart. But not smart enough," Sam murmured. From the time he'd been old enough to work a screwdriver, he'd been tinkering with things, starting with his mother's toaster when he was 5 years old, and both his degree and his work at DARPA had only honed his do-it-yourself skills.
"Keep a lookout," Sam said. Remy moved to the door and dropped to her knees, peeking through the gap between the hinges. He climbed into the middle boat, clicked on his LED, then clamped it between his teeth and wriggled his way under the helm console. The dashboard electrical system was a simple affair, the bundled cables hidden behind a plastic panel on the underside of the helm. In short order, he traced the wires for the ignition system, the headlight, the horn, and the windshield wipers. 4 snips from his Swiss Army knife scissors, and he had 2 7-inch lengths of excess wire, both of which he stripped and noosed at each end. He spliced one into the engine's solenoid and pocketed the other.
"What else?" Sam whispered absently. "Something easy, but not too obvious."
Remy looked over her shoulder and shrugged.
"You're asking the wrong gal. Any way you can rig something nasty for them?"
"Like a bomb? I wish. There's not enough here." He kept looking. It took 2 more minutes, but he found what he was looking for. A bent brush arm inside the alternator. He adjusted the arm back to its original position. Satisfied he'd found all of Kolkoff's handiwork, he ducked back under the dash, found the ignition wires, then scraped away the insulation and let them dangle. He crawled back out and climbed onto the dock. It took only a minute to find what he needed hanging from a wall pegboard, a 2-foot-long bungee cord with a hook at each end.
He secured the cord first to the steering wheel, then to the throttle, which he pushed to its forward stops. Finally, he untied the boat's bow and stern lines and let them drop into the water. Now came the tricky part, the timing. "How are we doing?" he asked Remy. "See for yourself. No sign of them." He crept back to the door and peeked out. The landing area was lost in the falling snow. He pulled Remy away from the door. "Soon as you hear the ignition spark, take off. Retrace our steps and we'll meet back at the woodshed." "Right." Remy got into position beside the door. Sam returned to the rigged boat and crawled beneath the helm console again. "Cross fingers," he muttered, then touched the exposed ignition wires and gave them a twist. There was a spark, then a pop. Sam wriggled backward, jumped to the dock, raced for the door. "Go!" he rasped to Remy. She peeked out, then darted into the gloom. The boat's engines gurgled to life. Gray smoke burst from the manifolds and filled the boathouse. The water beneath the stern turned to froth, and the boat surged forward, nosing through the doors and disappearing into the drifting snow. "Sail true," Sam said, then turned and ran.